The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Else on here?
Not a whole lot.
Yeah.
Let's see, is your microphone even on?
Hello.
No, it is not. There it is.
And dude.
Turn this on.
It's
like Saturday morning, and I go, Aubrey, there's a show everyone's been talking about. I finally have to watch it. We're going to start Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah?
Holy frick, dude.
It's a good,
it's a good
TV show, right?
It's so good.
I find it interesting that there are, that you like it as much as you do because of how much 80s nostalgia is in,
right,
is in that TV show. Because, I mean, you haven't seen, I mean, we could literally do a month's worth of Zach on Film.
Over that show.
That
oh,
is
just
on the
movies.
References that are the movies that are referenced in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
We might do that.
We might do that because I love that movie.
Because it's really good. I mean, yeah. You could just say, oh, wow, look at everything that is being referenced here that's being slid in.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was really disappointed with the movie because when I first saw the first episode, I was like, oh, man, this is nothing but an E.T. ripoff.
Yeah.
And then I even tweeted out. I said, well, if it can pull out of it, this E.T. nosedive that it's in, it might actually be good. And I watched the second one. I was like, okay, I see where it's going. And then by the third one, I was like, oh, now I totally get what they're doing as far as the references. Enjoy the ride. Watch the story. And it was great.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It was incredible. I was talking to a bunch of my friends about it. And it's just like everything about it. Like the soundtrack was one of the best things to listen to. Mm-hmm. The cinematography was amazing.
Both soundtracks are available on iTunes.
Oh, is there two of them?
There's two soundtracks. One, they came out in subsequent 2 weeks apart. One was in, I think, the second week in August, and the second was in the third week of August. Just go under the Stranger Things soundtrack.
Is it still just like the actual sound? Yeah. It's not like the songs, the extra songs? Mm-mm. I think it's all on Spotify,
I'm sure, has it, but if you want to get it all, it's there on iTunes. I went ahead and bought all of them, both of them, because I was like, man, this is good stuff.
It is.
And then there is...
Oh, it just says volume one.
There's a volume two that's available too.
Well, there is no volume two.
Look for
it. Oh, there it is. Crap. It's on Netflix too.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I didn't know that because I was listening to it before we finished it, and this would have been spoiler city.
Oh, because of some of the titles?
Titles. Oh, yeah. Volume two is super long too.
If you go on, I think someone on YouTube has put together like an ultimate mix of the theme song.
Oh, really?
Which is nothing but like an hour of the theme song, like being remixed and looped.
Yeah.
To where it's like, oh, I could listen to this for literally an hour.
Yeah. It is just crazy good. And we blew through it in Saturday, Sunday. And it was just,
It was a lot of fun.
That's what I think. It was so much fun. And the crazy thing about watching it was you would like end an episode in the beginning of the episode. It was right there. It was like an 8-hour movie.
Well, yeah. And that's one of the nice things about, with what Netflix has with everything is just on demand and you can binge watch it all at once is you can literally sit down and watch that one right after the other. And it just keeps, and you know, just keeps going until it's done. And it's well done. And I'm glad that they don't have, at the beginning of each episode, I'm glad they don't have, you know, here's what happened last time or, you know, something like that. It just right into the action. And the thing that's really weird is, I don't know if you caught this, but the Stranger Things title kept appearing later and later and later in the episode.
Yeah.
To where like you get into, was it the pool?
Uh-huh.
It's like the seventh episode or whatever it was. And it's like, 20 minutes into the into the show, and then the title sequence pops up, and then you've got another 30 minutes of the show left.
Yeah, it's really cool. Is it the ending? I was like, are they actually ever going to do it? Because I like that song, so I need it to happen. Because I was like, I don't think it's ever happening.
Yeah, it's very cool and worth checking out, and I totally enjoyed it. And I'm glad it's getting a second season.
Yeah, that is what blew my mind, because they announced it before I watched it, someone had said that all the words on the thing were the episode titles. Which I'm like, that show came out a month ago. Surely they already had this planned, because no one's writing scripts that fast.
It's interesting because after the, I think the first week that the show came out, the Duffer Brothers and Netflix were like, well, we don't really know if there's going to be a second season.
Mm-hmm.
And the Duffer Brothers are like, well, we have an idea of what we want to do if we can get a second season, but we don't know if we're going to get a second season or not.
Okay.
And then Netflix said, I mean, it is right now, I think, the most popular show that Netflix has released, even more popular than Daredevil, more popular than Jessica Jones, more popular than
House of Cards,
any of those things. It's so much more popular than that. And so they're like, okay, let's put this out. And they put out the trailer, and it's like, you watch it, and you're like, oh, Mad Max. Well, that was a movie from the 80s. And then you start watching the next one, and you're like, what does this mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then you suddenly realize by the time when you hit the Pollywog one that, oh my gosh, these are the titles for the second season.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, wait, there's 9 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting a whole new, we're getting one extra episode next season. And the other thing that I like about Netflix and that I like about the Netflix productions is that they allow you to make your show for as long as it needs to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was one of the things that I was disappointed with in Stranger Things, that there's one episode that's literally like 35 minutes.
Yeah, it's really short.
And I was like, oh man. But then you think about it, it's like, if we need to tell a story, and Daredevil has done this and some of the other Netflix original stuff has done this, where if our episode needs to be 86 minutes, it's going to be 86 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If it needs to be 54 minutes, it'll be 54 minutes. And if it needs to be 32 minutes, it'll be exactly 32 minutes.
Yeah.
So I like that concept that they're not wrapped around, you know, traditional television where a show has to be 57 minutes and 8 seconds or something like that. Or you have to have your intro come in right at, you know, the first 3 minutes of the show. And so I really dig that a lot, in that you have this freedom to do things. And for someone like me that has kind of grown up with traditional television, traditional way cable television is done, broadcast television is done, it's so refreshing to just finally say it's as long as it needs to be.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter.
Yep.
Because it's all ones and zeros, and we're not eating up, you know, we're not eating up airwaves or anything like that. And so that's kind of shaped, you know, how we've done some of the shows at Major Spoilers, where it's like, well, if this show needs to be 20 minutes long, this show's 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
And if it needs to be 4 hours long, and that's what is needed to tell this particular part of the story, then that's how long it's going to be.
Yeah. It's
I mean, I don't like super long
podcasts
that eat up a lot of people's time,
but it is what it needs to be. And Netflix is kind of like embraced, you know, like YouTube or Vimeo, where there's like, well, there's no reason, there's no time limits. It's just, it is what it is. And you would think other people would catch on to that in ways that they can. Cause I think of like HBO, where they're not really tied to a time length.
They're not.
Maybe they're more than like Netflix or anything like that, but they don't really it's like anything. They're like within 55 or like 64 minutes.
They still try to keep on that, but I think it hurts them.
Like Game of Thrones, like some of those episodes should be a lot shorter.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But they really, I think, yeah, you're right. Stranger Things, I think, had episodes like 42 minutes, and the last episode was like 58 minutes. But nothing really felt long. Nothing really felt short. They timed everything out perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
It was so fun and like creepy and scary and just everything, that it was like, oh, I just loved it so much.
Well, you know, HBO with The Night Of, I don't know if you've watched that.
Oh, I haven't yet.
I've only gotten, I think, 2 or 3 episodes in, because at the time it was still being released every week. The episodes are around 79 minutes long, which again is not an HBO. It's not an HBO show length, right? I mean, you're thinking of 90 minutes. I mean, if it's 79 minutes, that means that if you were watching HBO, they would have 10 minutes of either behind the scenes, which is HBO's done that a lot.
Yeah.
Or you've got 10 minutes of promo stuff coming up next on HBO. So to be able to sit down and see a 79-minute show, if that's how long it takes to tell that chapter of the story, then great. And I really am becoming a big fan of that. I'm also becoming a fan of the shorter seasons. You know, I used to think that was used to be my biggest complaint, is that if a show wasn't, you know, 32 episodes, mm-hmm. you know, back in the day, Rockford Files would have 35 episodes in a season, right? And it's like, ah, you got that, plus, you know, the summer reruns and all that. Mm-hmm. And so you had something to fill up your time. And then over time, that's gotten to like 28 episodes, 22 episodes. And then, as you mentioned with Game of Thrones and some of these others, where, and Doctor Who's the same way, where it's like 12 episodes, that's your season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, ah, but I love this stuff so much. I want it to continue on and on and on and on. And then suddenly, I've gotten to this realization that, you know, there were some really, really great Rockford Files episodes, and there were some really great episodes of your fill-in-the-blank favorite TV show from back in the day, but they had to fill in 52 weeks of programming with most people watching 30 weeks of it. That. And if in order to compete for those at the time, three networks, you had to have that new offering every week, which often meant that a lot of those shows weren't very good because you're just cramming stuff in to fill up that space.
Right.
And I think I'd rather have 12 really, really super great episodes or 8 really great episodes of something like Stranger Things than 35 episodes of crap.
Yeah. And I was going in, we're like halfway through Stranger Things, and I was like, oh, I was like, there's surely 10 episodes of it. Like, didn't even think to look. I didn't want to like stumble upon a weird show title or anything like that. And then Bowery starts episode 8, and I go, oh, this is the last episode.
Yeah.
Which then when I thought about it, I'm like, oh, well, no, that feels right, because I don't know leading up, like coming into this episode, how they're going to stretch this on any longer. I'm sure they could have, because they're amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But it felt right, and it felt good, and the ending was so perfect of catapulting us into anxiety of having to wait probably like 11 months for the
It's really not
going to
be that long, because they are shooting October through April. So they're starting like just in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And they've got basically a 4-month run.
Yeah.
October, November, January, February, March, April. So 6 months. They'll be shooting 6 months to get their 9 episodes in. And then I believe it will debut next summer again.
So excited.
So it's following a nice format. I mean, again, I'm thinking about all the shows that have done this. Burn Notice did it on USA Network when they just had their summer run where they had 12 or 13 weeks of summer shows. Doctor Who, I've mentioned. I'm trying to think of some other ones that have done that. You mentioned Game of Thrones has done that, where people then have to wait forever to get their new episodes.
Yeah,
I think it builds anticipation, but it also, again, like I said, I can't stress enough, if you're going to tell a really solid story, then I think you may need to take some time to do that.
Yeah, and there's also the thing of taking time and making shorter seasons of, there are so many shows that people are watching now, and especially if you're putting it up on Netflix, people are watching it in a weekend. Like, they're consuming it and they're moving on to the next thing.
Right.
While they're still going to love your thing and rewatch it and talk about it, like, they're on to the next thing. And even with Netflix, it's like they have a new show coming out like every 3 months. And so they have programming to get people
through.
Yeah,
so I wonder, have you looked to see how often the Netflix shows come out?
No.
The new original Netflix shows?
No.
Because right after Stranger Things, I start to see stuff for the Get Down.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you haven't seen
that's really good.
That is really good, too. I enjoyed that. And that's getting a second season.
Oh, good.
So that's something to look forward to. So if you want to see kind of like the beginnings of hip hop and rap, watch that. It's really, really good.
Of course.
The first episode, maybe not so good. And that's the one that's directed by Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, really?
which you would think that would be the one that would be like blow your mind kind of trippy, but it kind of stumbles in places and the story isn't structured quite right.
Weird.
But then after you get past, I think, the second episode, it seems like these Netflix series, after the second episode, man, it really hits its stride. And I think if you think about Daredevil, I don't know if that was the big, long, uninterrupted sequence or if that was episode 4 or something like that. No, it was episode 2, I believe. It's just this big, long, uninterrupted sequence. It's like, oh, okay, now we're really burning all the way to the end. But the Get Down is really good. And then is Narcos, is that in
Netflix? Narcos is a really big, popular show on Netflix.
Yeah, so that's another one that's got another season coming up real soon, or is in the process of season 2.
I think one just came out.
And they,
I don't watch it, but...
Oh, no, one has been out for a while.
I think season 2 just came out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And 3 and 4 got announced.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, it's like, you've got Stranger Things, The Get Down, Narcos season 2. Is there another House of Cards, or Orange is the New Black?
It hasn't been announced yet.
Is coming that we've, you know,
or
we've
House
got,
of Cards usually like February time.
At the end of the month, we have Luke Cage.
Right.
Right. So you're right. It seems like every month they have a new series for you to binge on. And even that, I used to question, you know, this ability to, do people really binge? Because how do you have time to blow an entire weekend?
Dude.
or, you know, an entire day just it's sitting nuts. Down and watch it. And I remember, back on when I first discovered Deadwood, and it was already into like second season or something, maybe the third season when I finally caught on to it. Because my friend was telling me, oh, you got to see it. And so we got it on DVD, the first two seasons. And my wife and I burned through the first two seasons. And those are, 12, 15 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
We burned through those in the entire weekend. So I know it can be done, but we got nothing else done that weekend.
Yeah. No, it's horrible. I am an ardent person against binge watching. I can do about two episodes of something, maybe three if it's a really good show in a day. And I'm like, I'm done. I have to go do something. Mm-hmm. I can't handle it anymore. And Aubrey's the opposite. She wants to watch it all day. Can't handle it. But Stranger Things, nope.
So what was it about Stranger Things that made you want to sit down and binge the entire thing in one weekend? Because again, that's 8 hours over 2 days. That's only like 4 hours. That's like two afternoons that you spent watching that. Yeah. So you had plenty of time to do other stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it was, I think it was just the tone of everything struck a nice chord for me of, I thought the kids were really funny, but there is also this creepy sci-fi element that was really enjoyable. And it was, first of all, the cinematography was just
really nice
to watch. The soundtrack was just perfect. It just like hit this perfect storm of, I don't listen to a lot of 80s music, but I love that type of electronic music that is kind of indicative of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. The cinematography was great. The story was, like, it was just weird. Like, it was weird, and I'm not going to say strange, because that would just be too on the nose, but it was just, it was a fun show to watch, and it didn't seem taxing. Like, it didn't stretch on. Like, they didn't stretch on to longer. Like, well, this is boring. I never felt bored.
My biggest fear when I saw, after the first episode, or maybe the second episode, I was like, I wonder if this is going to be an X-Files, where there's all sorts of creepy things going on in this town, or if it's just, you know, if they're going to actually follow this one story all the way through to the end, because they've got a lot of things going on in there. I mean, they've got, I mean, certainly with Eleven, you have her character exhibiting a lot of the telekinesis, the Firestarter type stuff, which is one of the movies that's referenced in the show. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with the government conspiracy and the dead body bit. And it's like, and they could go in a lot of different directions like this. And I hope that they just, and I'm glad that they stuck with the one story. It's interesting that originally it was not supposed to take place in Indiana. It was supposed to take place at Montauk, New York. And if you are a conspiracy theorist person, that name rings a bell, because Philadelphia Experiment had part of its origins in Montauk. Philadelphia Experiment was this thing that took place in, I believe, Philadelphia Harbor, Boston Harbor, during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly, and you can go see, there's actually a movie called The Philadelphia Experiment.
Okay.
They were trying to do some cloaking of ships by using huge electromagnets and electricity and everything. Cool. And supposedly, as the story goes, the ship completely not only disappeared from radar, but it disappeared from sight, and the ship disappeared in time. And so what happens is there's two guys that jump ship, and they wound up in like 1986 or something like that, had all these adventures. And then they went back to 1946.
Whoa.
And so the Montauk shipyards and all this other stuff that was there is kind of this epicenter for the paranormal weirdness, government secret cover up stuff. So originally this was supposed to take place in Montauk. I don't know why the Duffer brothers decided not to go that direction, or why it had to take place in Indiana. But I kind of like the Indiana setting a little bit better than New York, because it feels more rural.
Right.
And it feels more, I don't want to say plain.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel special when you say this takes place in Indiana. Nobody in Indiana, none of the characters in this story are special or unique because of where they come from. And oftentimes when you think of this vast wilderness that is the Midwest and the central part of the United States, you just think, there's a reason why it's called a flyover state because nothing interesting ever happens there. So when this stuff happens to these people in this small town in Indiana, suddenly the story does get elevated a little bit more to where, whoa, this could be happening. If this is happening in Indiana, what's going on in my backyard? What's going on in, Texas or Louisiana or New York or Los Angeles or any of those kinds of things? So it really kind of works in that more suburban, rural setting that I don't think you could do in a place like New York, where I know that there's a lot of green space and open spaces, but I don't think you have that, even in the 80s, have that hometown, small town feeling where everybody kind of knows everybody and you can kick back and relax like you see the sheriff and everybody doing in this show.
Right. Yeah. It's, I think they captured that tone really well. And it also, and, you know, I think this is just me coming from watching a bunch of movies. If you put this, or put like a plant like that, like the corporation, the energy people in a New York City or something, there are already these like weird conspiracy things around
it.
Right. When that's an element to this show, but they're written off because it's like, oh, they're just like this thing and we don't really care about them because they don't really bother us. So there's no reason to investigate or really think about what's happening in that weird government run energy plant over there. And so they just, I think that is a benefit to the setting.
One of the other supposed experiments that were going on at Montauk were these remote sensing, remote viewing things. I don't know if you know what remote sensing is. It's basically where you sit in a room and you focus on something and you are either projected there or you're able to see the events that are there. Dope. And so if you've ever seen the movie, what is it called? Men Who Stare at Goats or something.
With Clooney and stuff.
Yeah. It is based on these experiments, actual government experiments. Well, it's interesting because the Montauk metaphysics experiments are the same experiments that Eleven is doing. Remote viewing, sensing in this. So we're supposedly with remote viewing, remote sensing, you can see what other people are doing or you can find things that are hidden. And one of the things that I remember, this is Art Bell Coast to Coast conspiracy stuff, which is always great if you can go back and listen to some of those old episodes. But, you know, they would use this to try to track submarines originally. Where are the submarines hidden? Where are these high officials hidden? And then I forget who it was. I forget the guy. He kind of split it off and did his own thing and started doing remote sensing or remote viewing to help find missing children. And he had this big thing where he's trying to find this secret stash of gold and all this stuff. So, you know,
weird stuff.
And again, if you go and look for the Montauk Project, if people want to listen, look for it. But it's basically like the project got out of control and like the Philadelphia experiment where some people had get sent through time, supposedly in the Montauk Project, somebody ripped open a hole between dimensions and something came through.
Awesome.
Just like we see in Stranger Things.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say when you mentioned you were kind of worried like it would go X-Files and be this big sprawling creepy creepiness. I really appreciated how they kept the story, you know, seemingly confined into this one thing. And it was like it didn't unveil this huge government conspiracy where there was all this stuff happened. It was just this one location, this one thing had happened. And even when you finally piece together Eleven's thing with the whole upside down and how she factored into it being opened, it's like, oh, well, now we converge it into just this person caused this instead of it being multiple things kind of happening at once.
Yeah.
And it was really tightly written.
So let's see. Let's go through this list. This is from Vulture.com. And they've compiled a list of what they believe are all of the movie references made in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
So first of all, we have Alien and Aliens from 79 and 86. Maybe not so much Aliens, unless you're talking about, you know, towards the end of Aliens, but certainly Alien with this polywog and when they go to the the upside down. I keep wanting to call it the Underdark because that's what it kind of feels like from Dungeons and
Dragons.
But you know, the things that are forcing, and a little bit of spoilers here, forcing themselves down into the throats of people to impregnate them with the thing. So you've got that. You have Altered States, which is really a trippy movie about sensory deprivation. Didn't you do a sensory deprivation tank?
I wanted to. I went to the city to go do it, and the dude was like, I'm on vacation, so I couldn't do it. But we were watching Stranger Things, like, Aubrey, I still need to go do this, because I really want to.
Yeah, so Altered States is all about that.
Okay.
About a scientist that's doing sensory deprivation and LSD tripping and everything together, and that's pretty trippy. Then you've got Blow Up. There's a scene where the photographer kid is taking pictures of the girl and her boyfriend in the room, and he sees without knowing it, sees... what's her name? Beth?
Are you forgetting her like everyone else in the town did?
Yeah.
Barb.
Where she disappears, so he only sees that when he's developing the photos. There's Body Double. There's John Carpenter's music, which, again, if you like that opening sequence music.
Yeah.
Well, if you've seen Big Trouble in Little China, we've watched The Thing.
Yeah, Big Trouble in Little China soundtrack is
amazing.
If
you listen to the opening bits of that, and even They Live, listen to that opening music of those three films, and you'll hear a lot of that in the opening of this show and throughout the show.
Wasn't John Carpenter's Oh, geez, the thing. Uh-huh. That's the movie we watch. That's in this movie, right? Isn't that what the science teacher's watching?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, because he's like, yeah, there's, you know, this is not really
microwave bubblegum.
Yeah. I want to see more of him in second season.
Yeah, he was such a cool character.
Yeah.
I liked him so much.
There's something about him that he's got all the answers, but why does he have all the answers and he's a high school science teacher? I mean, I've had some science teachers that are really cool. In fact, when I was in high school, my physics teacher was really pretty cool in the fact that this was around the same time that MacGyver had just started.
Oh, sure.
And so I would go in and go, I just saw this TV show where this man built this balloon out of, you know, raincoats and gum. And my physics teacher would just shake his head and just be so irate at that show because it was twisting physics around and what you could and couldn't do. And so I would come in and be talking about all this stuff that MacGyver had done and go, okay, stop. Let's look at the physics behind this, or let's look at the real science behind this and see what's real and what's not real. And that led into, you know, some really interesting science discussions. So if some kid called up and said, hey, we're reading Omni Magazine or, you know, whatever excuse that they made, and we're trying to build a deprivation tank, how would we go about doing that?
Or like, how would you go into an alternate dimension?
And so, you know, maybe because he's like-minded, you know, into this science stuff, maybe this guy does study this stuff and probably does read Omni Magazine at the time period, or, you know, Omni was this great science magazine. Kind of and delved into pseudoscience and different kinds of stuff. Interestingly, it was published by Penthouse Magazine. So you had Penthouse, which was making, you know, pornographic magazines. But then you had this award winning Omni Magazine that was all about science and next generation science and everything. So it would, I could see that the science, that the, that the science teacher would have this background in it. But even coming from a rural school myself, man, we never had a ham radio set up or anything like that.
Yeah, it was intense.
AV club. I mean, this is from, I mean, this town's relatively big for what they're portraying in the show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not some 800 person.
No, 800 person
piece. Carrie obviously is in there when she starts throwing people around.
Yeah.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind is all over the place, especially with the lights blinking all over the place. We've watched Close Encounters.
That was one of the first ones we did.
Empire Strikes Back, obviously, a lot of references to that. E.T. to the Extraterrestrial, obviously. The Evil Dead, there's a lot of posters popping up in there. Firestarter, which is a great Stephen King. Who is Drew Barrymore is the little girl in here. That's the fire starter.
Okay.
The Fog. That's John Carpenter's The Fog. The Goonies. Jaws. Last Starfighter. The Manhattan Project. Minority Report. Yeah. I think Minority Report. The Nightmare on Elm Street. Poltergeist, which you do get a lot of that Poltergeist feel in there. We watched the remake.
Oh, yeah,
that's right. Predator from 1987, which I don't see as much, but I guess it's in there. And the weird thing why I don't think that you could, I think that there's a hard limit when they're putting some of these movies references in here. I think there's a hard limit because this takes place in 1983, Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that's kind of influencing that should take place. The movie should have been released before that date.
Yeah.
In my mind. Right. Because, and that's kind of, if you look at it, Firestarter is 84. So that would be one that diverges from that.
Yeah. I mean, even though Firestarter is heavily
in
there.
No. Yeah. I mean, certainly they can't self-reference it in the movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, the new season will start 1 year later, which is good because these kids are going to shoot up because of puberty and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen all the talk shows they've been on? They all look completely different. They're funny.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know, Eleven's British, which that threw me for
which
a loop.
One?
11.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, she doesn't talk much. So.
No. Yeah. But she was on like Fallon or something and she had an accent.
That's cool. Nightmare on Elm Street, we said Poltergeist, Predator, Scanners. I don't know if you've ever seen Scanners, but that is a creepy ass.
Is that the one
where the heads blow up?
Oh, no. I was going to say, is that the one with like all the weird messages hidden in the billboards?
No, that's They Live.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't seen Scanners. Scanners like pops up on a bunch of my stuff to watch, though.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because, again, it's this, you know, the power of the mind. And if I focus, I can make your head blow up. And that's what the Scanners do. And there's some scenes where people's heads are just blowing up on screen. Stand By Me, obviously. They Live, as we've mentioned, The Thing, Under the Skin, which is the Scarlett Johansson movie.
Oh, yeah. That was definitely a vibe when Eleven was in, like, the dark...
In the dark
black
place.
Room. Like, oh, this looks like Under the Skin.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, Videodrome, which, man, I think Videodrome. I've only seen that once. Yeah. Basically, it's about some TV channel that is freaking out your mind.
And, oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's what the Vulture says. And I think there's a few more. I haven't gone back to watch Stranger Things for a second time yet.
Yeah.
I really want to. but I just haven't, I haven't had the time. Like I said, I started getting into the Get Down.
Oh yeah.
And then I started on the first season of, the cocaine show, the,
Narcos. Yeah.
So I've started the first season of that, watched the first episode of that. I mean, I don't know if I'll continue on that or not, but, I really want to sit down and watch.
Yeah.
That.
I think I have never, I mean, besides like sitcoms and reruns on TV or anything, never watched like an hour of drama over again, but I'm going to watch Stranger Things again.
Yeah. I want to watch it again. Maybe we should do, something, side project or something where, oh yeah, Pretty in Pink is mentioned in here. Where we sit down and we just review in detail every episode, like a commentary
thing. That
would be
the best.
I don't know. It'd be cool, though.
It'd be fun.
Yeah. What else did you like? What else do you notice about this new generation of television shows and movies that are coming in from a very different approach. I mean, we've talked before. I mean, we talked when we were talking about 1969 and the something of 69 and what was going on in film. We're really talking about film creators in the 60s and early 70s who are like, you know what? I'm tired of doing what Hollywood wants me to do. I want to do something that's a reflection of society, something that is impacting me. And I want to make a comment on what's going on around me. And so we see the movies in the 60s and 70s. We talked about this before. It's really this anti-war, Vietnam, you know, people trying to find themselves, freak out stuff that's going on during this time period. By 77, I think that changes with George Lucas and Star Wars. Yeah. We can talk more about that later. But it seems like as we've moved forward, we get into the second generation of film school, the indie film school group with Kevin Smith, with Clerks. And he sits there and he's like, you know what? I just want to tell the story that I want to tell. I want to tell the things that embraces my love of things that I had growing up. And if you listen to the dialogue and everything that runs through Clerks, it's really Kevin Smith making commentary on things that he dug. Right now, I don't know how old the Duffer Brothers are. Do you know?
No, I haven't looked it up because
I gotta say that, I mean, they've got to be.
Surely they're like,
They were born in 1984, so they are 14 years younger than I am.
And they're what?
32.
Oh no,
something like that.
7 years older than I am.
Yeah.
So yeah, 30 something.
30 something. They're in their 30s.
Yeah, that seems about right to me.
Which is weird because they were born after all of this time of all the movies that they're.
Yeah,
that
they really
right?
live, what, almost half a decade through the 80s?
But here's the thing. By the time that they really get into, and we've talked about this on the Major Spoilers podcast, where we talk about the films that most influenced you are the films that happen right around when you're going through puberty, right around the time that you go from about 12, maybe 10, to about 16. Those are that's the time period where media is going to influence you the most. So when we look at a movie like Clerks from Kevin Smith, that came out in, what year did that come out? Kevin Smith's Clerks.
Like 92 or
I
something?
I say it was, because I was still in college
91.
When that came out, and I was laughing my hiney off. That movie came out in 94.
Oh, okay.
So these guys, remember I said 10 to 16, 10, right?
Yeah.
So they would have been 10 years old when this movie came out.
Hopefully they did not watch Clerks when they were 10.
I bet they did.
And they might have.
I bet they did. If you think about what was going on in the 90s, I mean, it's not uncommon for kids to just go home, turn on the TV, go to the video store. Yeah. Hey, they've got a Blockbuster subscription. You remember Blockbuster, right?
I remember Blockbuster.
You got a Blockbuster subscription. You just go to the store and you just get these movies. So here's Clerks, which was a hard movie to get here in Hayes. My friend Brian and I, we did something kind of bad. We did three consecutive checkouts where he would check it out for 2 or 3 days. Then when he was taking it back, I would be there and I would check it out for 2 or 3 days. And then when I took it back, he would check it out 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And there was a long waiting list of people wanting to see this movie. So imagine the young Duffer Brothers in 1994, at 10 years old, watching Clerks. I don't know if this is an influence. I don't know anything about it, but I can imagine that they watch something like this and go, Kevin Smith did this for $27,000. We can tell the stories, and he's telling stuff that he loves, that he embraces. I can see the Duffer Brothers and this current generation of film and Netflix and online personalities, having seen films like Kevin Smith's stuff and being brought up in an age of VHS and Blockbuster rentals where you just go and check out everything, that this new group, the Duffer Brothers, are saying, hey, we are sharing, we're not trying to hold up a mirror to society. We're not trying to make a comment on society. We're not trying to do what the big studios want to do. Those are two generations of film and television that have been out there. It's been done. We want to do something different. And so we see this new group of video and film professionals that are sitting there saying, now I want to tell you about what I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you a story that references the things that I love, because maybe I saw Kevin Smith do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can do that too. And so I want to think that if we follow that, the generation is kind of following the generation that came before. I was heavily influenced by Spielberg and Lucas mm-hmm. and all these guys from the 70s and 80s. Here are people that are being influenced by Kevin Smith and stuff when they're going through their time period. I think that's why we've hit this stride now where we have, in the comic book world, we have Jeff Johns, who's like, man, I got to bring back every Silver Age character because those are the characters that I love. Or I want to tell stories about characters that I love because this is what I loved. It's not because this is the right thing to do with business or this is the right thing to do with what other people want. I want to tell stories that I want to tell. And it seems somewhat selfish,
mm-hmm.
but I think that is what we're seeing. I think we're actually seeing people saying, I love this and I want to share my love for this.
Mm-hmm. You know, so they were born in the 80s, and there's a couple of things that are really nice about being in 2016 and mm-hmm. putting your story back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Is one, I think the 80s have this really cool aesthetic that like the 90s don't have, and really the 2000s don't, like the neon lights, clothing. Mm-hmm. What people are listening to is all this like really good thing. Like I realize, like, I think I love the 80s, but I love like the clean version of the 80s that's in the movies. Yeah. Not like what I don't know what it's like to grow up in the 80s. But there's this idea of what the 80s looked and sounded like. That's really nice. And it's also before the internet
mm-hmm.
and it's also before cell phones. We don't have to work around those two things in researching or contacting people. You get to use walkie-talkies, and mm-hmm. they have to ride bikes everywhere, mm-hmm. and they have to go to the library.
Uber, and you don't have Lyft,
there's this
and you
nice
don't have cell phone. You don't have internet. Yeah,
it's almost like this hearkening back to an age of America that wasn't that long ago, but it was before everyone became really connected, and this one incident would have spread over the United States,
right?
And would have been filmed on their cell phones
and everywhere,
and on YouTube. If it was
11
in
going into the store and blowing everything up for waffles, would have been, you know, a YouTube viral sensation. No, you're totally right. And I've said this before. I said technology has ruined the detective genre.
Absolutely.
In that, you know, really good detective genre requires, you know, traffic, you know, following some, tailing someone in a car, you know,
mm-hmm.
footwork. You have to do research. You have to get it to the telephone, public call box.
You know, we've even seen this in like James Bond, where they're mm-hmm. setting it in modern times,
mm-hmm.
but all of his gadgets go back to time zone. It's like they are acknowledging where they are, but like, well, these stories were kind of better mm-hmm. because he had to do things weird, and the gadgets were.
I really think for a lot of stories, I think technology has ruined the ability to tell stories because it's such an easy out where you and I are sitting here and we're talking about, huh, what years did Clerks come out? Well, I don't have to go to a log view magazine to try to find it. I've got it right here in front of me on the computer, mm-hmm. or I've got the entire world. And we talked about this with the iPhone, how it mm-hmm. is almost the exact same size and shape of the obelisk in 2001. And all I have to do is ask Siri a question, and I can find the answers in the palm of my hand. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got GPS technology. We got things like Find Friends, where I don't need to hire a detective to know where someone is at. I can just press the Find Friends at and know that. And so, I think really technology has hindered this stuff.
Yeah.
And so putting this stuff back in the 80s, and again, growing up in the 80s is as someone who has done it, but not lived in the big city, but had access to big cities.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was 14 in 84, so I had a driver's license. I was able to go to Topeka and Lawrence in Kansas City and do things there. And my parents trusted me. Today, sending your 14-year-old 80 miles away to go hang out and go see a movie, is that something you think you'd do?
Yeah.
I mean, and in the 80s, you did have, you know, a bunch of mass murders and those kinds of things, but it was just be careful and put a quarter in your shoe so you can call home. I asked that on Twitter a while ago. It's like, do people remember their parents telling you to put a quarter in your shoe or a dime in your shoe? And several people responded back, yes, because you would use that quarter in an emergency. If someone robbed you and stole your wallet, at least you had a quarter that you could call home.
Never heard of that
before. Could go to a payphone and call home. You can't do that today because everyone has a cell phone, or you can borrow a cell phone, or, mm-hmm. you know, phone access is relatively free. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even know if you have very many payphones around anymore, but you know, the concept of a payphone is in itself just so cool. And as a product of an age that, you know, I need to make a phone call. I need to, you know, it's 10 minutes before the store closes, or the girl of my dreams is about to leave home forever. And if I don't get on the phone and call her, I'm going to miss it. And I'm running down the street looking for a payphone, and the payphone that's occupied is some little old lady is talking. And do I wait outside the payphone, or do I open the door and shove her out and say, sorry, lady, close the door and hang up the and call the love of my life? You can't have scenes like that anymore. You can't have Superman going. In fact, in 77, as we see a change in technology in the 50s, Superman could go into a box phone booth and change his clothes and come out as Superman.
Yeah.
In the 77-78 version of Superman, Christopher Reeve is getting ready to change into Superman in Metropolis for the first time, and he goes and he sees a payphone, but it's a payphone that doesn't have an enclosure around it. It's just one of those standing free ones, and he's looking around and he's like, well, how do I fix this? This is not something that would have happened before. And so then he has to go into the rotating door and make his change there as the doors spin really fast. So even then they're commenting that technology changes the way that we're telling stories, and we have to adapt and we have to do things. And so when you look at the Duffer Brothers and what they're doing, they're saying, yes, here's all the great things that we loved and here's why it worked. But, and I really think that we're in this era now where people are like, I'm just telling stories about things I love. I'm not following a corporate rule. I'm not following some analytics. I'm not following, you know, holding a mirror to society. I'm making a comment on something I love. This is why I think fan films have risen to success, because people are telling stuff that they love in their universe. I think this is why we see something like Stranger Things that's a success. I think this is why coming up later this month, a guy who loved Raiders of the Lost Ark so much has spent like the last 5 years doing an animated short film called The Indiana Jones Adventures. And it looks fantastic. The stills that I've seen look fantastic. It's supposed to debut later this month. It is a fan film, although Spielberg's website kind of promoted it a little bit. And it may lead to a series. But here's a guy going, I love Raiders of the Lost Ark so much, I want to tell my own story. I want to create my own fan film about this. And it's going to get a lot of attention, because there's a lot of people who are like, I love Raiders of the Lost Ark. Right. It's much better than that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull stuff. I want to see this. And so I think, I don't know. I think that we're in that time period where you as a creator are going to tell things about things that you love, regardless if anyone else does or not. Yeah. But because you show that passion of what you love and what's out there, people are going to embrace it. Those that have that same passion, you're going to find your tribe. You're going to find your group. And I think Kevin Smith talks about that. And he's even talked about, you know, he doesn't care what people really think of him. He had a really great podcast where he reads reviews of his new movie, whatever it is.
Yoga Hosers. Yeah.
And he's like, well, you know what? Here's a review that they said about Clerks 2 that's just as bad. And he basically says, you know, I don't really, you know, Hollywood is okay, but Hollywood knows that, and the reviewers know that, I've got a group of people who will see my movie regardless. And I think that's what we're trying to do with an audience, is we're not trying to be mass appeal. We're trying to find, reach out and tell personal stories. We're trying to tell things that affect us and impact us, and the right people will get it.
Right. I was just listening to an interview, and I don't remember the director's names, but it was Ewan McGregor and the director of his latest movie, the 40 Days in the Desert. That one where McGregor plays Jesus and the devil.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen this.
But the conversation really wasn't about the film. It was about the idea that we've reached a point with art and, you know, film, TV, music, that success is driven by how many things you sold on iTunes, how many books you sold on something on Amazon, or how many movie tickets you sold. And so everyone's gearing their focus towards that. And so what we're creating is something with the most mass appeal possible.
Yeah, and that's,
so that, that everyone can go see it, where, you know, something like Kevin Smith doesn't care about mass appeal in the sense, because he wants to make it for those people. And I think, you know, the guy, spending his time and money and energy making an animated Indiana Jones cartoon or movie or show, whatever it is like, that's great, but he's never going to get it on network television, because he probably doesn't have the license of doing that.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I'm just doing this. I'm going to put it up on something until probably some studio says no. But everyone who loves this or likes what I do in general is going to love it and freak out about it. And, you know, that's the thing with Netflix and YouTube and, you know, anything else online, is that you can create something for a smaller audience now mm-hmm. and be successful
right.
and,
I mean,
and continue
look,
making what you want to make.
I mean, look at Joseph Kahn. I mean, he has,
yeah.
he's done a lot of big-time movies, and he's done a lot of music videos with
Taylor Swift
and others, and big well-known. But what does he do with his own money? I want to do a Power Rangers fan film, right?
Yeah.
Got him into a lot of trouble, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he got a lot of hot water out of it, but so many people embraced that, and so many people loved it. And unfortunately, you know, what you're talking about is Hollywood and business, and especially advertisers, have fallen onto this this metric, you know, that everything has to be based on metrics. And you know about mm-hmm. this, because
oh,
this is what you do now for your full-time job is metrics. And so advertisers are looking for someone like Kevin Smith, who has, I don't know how many followers Kevin Smith has at the moment.
A million.
Is that how many that he has?
I would think so.
That Kevin Smith?
Yeah, that Kevin Smith.
That Kevin Smith has, 3 million followers.
Mm-hmm.
So someone might approach him, or even what's her name that's all in the media that everyone talks about all the time. You know, she has like 17 million, and she's got no talent. Kardashian girl.
Oh, Kim.
Yeah, Kim Kardashian has like 17 babillion.
Yeah,
she has
like
the entire internet following her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And advertisers are like, well, she's got 17 babillion people.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get her to send out a tweet. Let's pay her $50,000 to do this plug. And you follow other people, some lesser models like Sarah Jean Underwood, the Playboy mm-hmm. Playmate kind of geek model kind of mm-hmm. girl. I don't know what her followers are, but she's always advertising different things. And you know that she's getting paid for it.
Yeah.
Because the advertiser is looking at 3 million people and they're saying, okay, if we can capture 0.01%.
Mm-hmm.
of Kevin Smith's audience, that equates to 300,000 people that will actually buy this product that we're selling.
Right.
Right. But that's still a gamble, because you may not get 300,000 people doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about it, click-throughs are about 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Buy-through after click-through is about 1% of 1%. So that's where it's the 0.01 or the 0.001, whatever it is. That's a really small fraction. And so, like, advertisers have embrace social media, embrace niche things like podcasts, like YouTube videos mm-hmm. and stuff, and they're trying to force in their broadcast method of throwing this net wide and hoping they can scoop in. Whereas when an advertiser comes with us, they're like, okay, well, how many people listen to your podcast? We're kind of interested. Your comic books, we understand that that's a big thing right now, is comic books mm-hmm. and comic book movies and stuff. So we'd like to advertise on a show like Zach on Film. Okay, all right. Well, Zach on Film gets this number of downloads per week.
Yeah.
So this is how many downloads we get per month. And they're like, wow, that's not a lot of people.
No.
I mean, you know, for what your advertising rate is, that's a lot that we're paying per person
mm-hmm.
or the CPM, the cost per million.
Yeah.
That's an awful lot. I don't know if we can do this. What advertisers are failing to realize is we have X number of listeners who are our dedicated listeners. We have, for Zach on Film, we have people that either like our personalities or trust us or enjoy our conversations on media and film and whatnot. That's our niche audience. So if we said, hey, listeners out there, and this is not a plug or anything, but as an example, if we said, we want you this week, everybody, to go to our website at majorspoilers.com, click on that Amazon link and buy something through that Amazon link. And it would be interesting. It would be an interesting experiment if all of you listeners would do that within the first 5 days of listening to this episode, because I would really like to see, I could measure. That's a metric that I could measure.
Yeah.
But here we have X number, 10,000, 100,000 dedicated listeners that would be easier to sell to than 3.01 million
sure.
Twitter followers.
Yeah.
And you're going to actually get a better return rate from the Zach on Film listener base than you would on the Kevin Smith base or the Adam Carolla base mm-hmm. or the Mark Maron base. But because those numbers are so small, the advertiser can risk gambling that money and saying, okay, we can spend $15,000 to do this ad spot on the Carolla project or the Carolla show, Adam Carolla show. And that $15,000 will probably translate back into about $20,000 to $30,000 worth of business. So from that perspective, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
If we go with what Major Spoilers is doing with Zach on Film, yeah, we could spend $1,000. We might get $5,000 back in return. But that's not as, you know, that's not a double digit number. So
mm-hmm.
that's probably not something we want to do. And Hollywood hasn't figured this out. And I don't think cable networks have figured this out. And certainly broadcast networks haven't figured this out.
No.
Is that there are shows like Stranger Things that appeal to a niche audience. Mm-hmm. And the niche audience, like myself, Brian Brushwood, I mean, Brian Brushwood had started onto episode 3, and this was, I think, the week after Stranger Things had come out. And that's when I was like, well, Brian's watching this. What is this Stranger Things? I've seen people mention it. Maybe I'll go look into it. That's mm-hmm. how I got hooked onto it.
Yeah.
So if you can get me or Brian Brushwood or somebody go, oh, this is a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
Zach, you should check this out. And then Zach checks it out and tells all of his friends. Then you have this groundswell, this grassroots growth effort of the film that makes it popular, the mm-hmm. TV show that makes it popular. And that's the thing that Hollywood and advertisers and television can't figure out, because they're like, how do we do that? And you probably get approached by this all the time. How do I make something viral? How do we make something viral? We got to make this viral.
You have no idea how many times you were like, we need to make a viral video. I'm like, oh, we need to make a viral video.
That's
what it is. So, we just got to say we want to make one.
Let us tie this into something that we've talked about before on Zach and Film when you were a student, where people would come to me when I was chair and you were a student and they're like, we're looking for a student to do a project because it won't take them any time at all, right? It's like, oh, this will be, you know, just an hour's worth of work to do this. Is that realistic when someone says, hey, we want you to come and do our commercial for us for nothing, right?
Yeah.
That is the equivalent of someone saying, we need to make this viral.
Yeah.
It is the uninformed people who are out there saying, oh, yeah, you can just do this big video for us. It's no big deal. It's not going to cost you any time, effort, money. Why does it cost so much? It's easy. I see it on TV all the time. They have no clue. And so when you have someone that says, oh, we need to make this go viral, those are people that don't understand it either.
No. And that whole idea is so funny. It's funny and frustrating to be around. It's like, oh, you just have no idea how the internet works. Like, are you involved on anything that's the internet? Because if that's what you think is happening, it's like someone's like, oh, we'll make a viral video. Then every major brand would be making a viral video every day.
So look at ABC and what they're doing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Mm-hmm.
They know that if they follow a specific format and if they spend X amount of money and whatever, they will attract X amount of audience. And they're hoping that they attract more, but they probably know what the expected baseline is, right? So they can base a show based on metrics, or based on data that they have. Well, we know that 18 to 24, whatever this metric, will watch this show. And we know that based on other shows that are in this time slot, this should do well and should fall in this. And hopefully it does better than this, but hopefully it doesn't go below this. And so they base a lot of their programming on these metrics, on these numbers. Hollywood does the same thing. Yeah. And this is why we find this great divide between creators and pay scales and diversity and, you know, aging out of Hollywood, where by the time you hit a certain age, you're too old to be of any worth if you're a female in movies. And so we kick you out. Whereas because they're following these formulas and these metrics, we had these conversations before about why Mars Needs Moms or whatever that animated movie was. And why John Carter of Mars also failed, you know, and a lot of bean counters were like, it's because it's about Mars and nobody wants movies about Mars. So therefore we have to stop all movies about Mars. They're doing the same thing now with everything that they do. They continue to do this. And so when you have somebody like Netflix or Amazon or Hulu that are doing original programming, they're like, you know what? The Mindy Project may not have 30 million people watching it every week. But if we have 1 million people that are interested in the Mindy Project and are willing to pay the Hulu subscription rate or whatever the Hulu subscription rate is, we can fund that show, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix is looking at it the same way. I mean, if you think about how Netflix originated, they went from, hey, we're a movie delivery service, we'll deliver DVDs, to, oh, no, we're no longer going to deliver DVDs because that's a huge cost to us. But now we have this huge profit margin. Now we can create, based on this subscription of people wanting to watch just movies, we can get television shows. And, oh, we can do our own original programming. Mm-hmm. What are people interested in? Well, here's something that's niche enough, that's good enough, that would never be on HBO.
Yeah.
This Stranger Things would never have made it onto HBO.
Nope.
Would never have made it onto a cable broadcast channel or even a traditional broadcast channel because it's just too weird.
Mm-hmm.
So Netflix is like, you know what? I think this has got something to it. Let's try it. Let's see it. I mean, I don't remember how much they paid for the Stranger Things budget. I want to say is like $1 million per episode or something like that.
That seems reasonable. Maybe a little bit less, I would guess.
Let's see. They had budget constraints. I'm seeing here again, thanks to the internet. We have all this right here front of us. I'm not seeing any dollar amounts at the moment popping up, but you guys go and do what you can do with this.
Yeah.
And if it's successful, then great. If not, yeah, then that's great too.
That's the great thing that I like about Netflix is they are willing to try and potentially fail on a lot of stuff. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, if you actually go through and see everything that Netflix is pushing out, there are so many shows you probably never heard of
right.
and you have no desire to watch right. because they realize, guess what? It's not for you.
It's not, right?
Yep,
it's
not for you.
I watch, everybody was talking about House of Cards, and I watched the first season. After the first season, I'm like, you know what? This isn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something for a lot of other people. It is for you.
Yeah.
Orange is the New Black is something for a lot of people. Stranger Things is something for a lot of people. It's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But it is for a group of people. And for that group of people, Netflix is serving up something that I want to watch. So for me, it's Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Get Down. And next we have Luke Cage. And then after that will be something else that I'm sure Netflix will have specifically tailored towards my interest. That's not going on. It's not going off that metrics, but they understand that we can create a small niche audience and we can attract that niche audience and capture them
mm-hmm.
as opposed to let's just cast that net wide and hope that this is a show that will succeed on an ABC Monday night, 7 o'clock time slot.
Yeah. And the reason that Netflix can do that and no one really cares, like I'm not mad that they're making, you know, some show they don't watch. You know, I've watched one episode of Daredevil and I was like, oh man, whatever. Like, I'm not a big fan of that kind of show. And so, but it's not eating up time on my television because it's on a network that's going to run from 8 to 9 every Thursday night when I could be watching something else. There's this freedom of choice that Netflix gives you. So they have this freedom to create almost whatever they want to and give it just for that one audience that is going to like it or we're going to reject it. And if they reject it, well, then we're fine. We're going to move on to the next project and we're going to try again.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, we don't know what the ratings are on this because Netflix doesn't share
really
anything.
Say anything.
I looked for the worst Netflix original shows. They list number one as Fuller House.
Aubrey watched that and she hated it.
That probably appealed to a lot of people.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They also list Sense8 on here as one of the worst Netflix
originals. I know people
originals,
who love that.
And I know people who really got a kick out of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me. I mean, I want to watch it. It seems like it'd be right up my wheelhouse,
uh-huh.
but I've yet to watch it because it doesn't have an interest in me. That's okay because Netflix found their audience and they paid for it through that audience. So I think the bottom line, and I had this on Patreon, on Periscope. I kind of do these impromptu Periscope question and answer things, usually on Friday nights if people are looking for me, 8 o'clock Central Time, something like that. And someone was asking about, I don't know, video or something. And I was like, you know what? If you do what you love, I guess they were questioning me doing this full time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? If you do this full time, if you love something, it doesn't feel like work. And if you, you know, continually to produce things and you're doing things that you think are right and things that you enjoy, there will be people that will like your content and come to your content and hopefully share your content, will draw other people to your content. Your audience will grow. You know, Zach on Film didn't have it kind of had a built-in audience because it was a spinoff of the Major Spoilers podcast, but it is as strong or stronger than the Major Spoilers podcast because it's drawn in other people that are, I'm not a comic book person.
Yeah.
I really like movie discussions and you guys are having some intelligent conversation. Hopefully I had a little too much to drink, I think tonight.
I should have had more to drink,
but it's something that I enjoy listening to and that's fine. That's what makes me happy. Right?
Right.
And that's, if I can share that love of film with you and you can share it with other people and you tell two people and so on and so on, it works itself out.
Yeah.
And I'm completely okay if Zach on Film never has 10 million downloads.
Me too, because that's too many people.
Is it?
I don't know.
We know a lot.
As long as I would never know, then I wouldn't care.
Yeah, we know a lot of our listeners, and we get that personal connection. But there are a lot of them that are out there that we don't know.
Yeah.
And certainly people who are out there can certainly go over to majorspoilers.com and use the comment section and tell us what they like or don't like about the show. And that's totally cool.
Yeah.
But even if, I mean, whether we're having this conversation, you and I, which we were supposed to be talking about Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah, week, right? I realized about 40 minutes ago that we weren't doing that.
So, you know, we were supposed to have a conversation about Once Upon a Time in the West. I watched it. You watched it, hopefully.
I did watch it. Things. Holy moly.
This is you and I having a conversation and having fun having a conversation.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that there's two microphones in front of our faces and we're recording this conversation.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if there's one person that's listening to this, or 10 million people that are listening to this show.
Oh, yeah.
This is fun. We're sharing our ideas and thoughts, and you and I are having a moment, a conversation, just like if there are a group of people sitting around playing a game, talking about comic books, talking about movies or pop culture or whatever, the cars, sports, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to create that, if they're enjoying creating it, then it shouldn't matter how many people are listening.
Right.
That's a little bit different if you're trying to base your entire NPR funding off of your podcast. That's a little bit different. Or if you're Kevin Smith that's trying to build an empire, or Adam Carolla or whatever.
Right.
Mark Maron gives two craps. I'm glad I'm sure he's worried about how many people are listening. But he doesn't get wrapped up in, oh my gosh, 5,000 people stopped listening this week. Something's wrong. I got to retool or something like that. It's just he enjoys what he's doing. It's allowing him to have his voice. And people listen to it because he's genuine and real. And I think that when we look at something like Stranger Things, it's genuine and real because these guys are doing something that they love doing. You can tell that they love doing it. And you can almost get the sense that they don't care if anybody watches it because they were able to tell the story that they wanted to tell.
Yeah, there's definitely this sense of, well, someone for some reason gave us a bunch of money so we could make this show. And guess what? It's going to be exactly what we want it to be. It's going to be weird. It's going to be, back to the time that we loved and reference all these things that we love. A lot of other people do, and they love those things too. Maybe they'll watch, maybe they won't. But guess what? We get to make for the next probably 4 or 5 months this show that we dreamed of.
Yeah. And so
people will watch it.
I don't know. People were like, oh, I don't know about doing my own show, or just do your own show, right? If you want to do your own podcast, just do your own podcast. I mean, bandwidth is infinite, basically. Now, listener time is not infinite, so you do have to do some different things. But if you're doing a podcast that you love and enjoy, don't worry about the numbers. Just do it.
Yeah,
create. Just make. That should be the title of this episode. Just make.
Just make.
Just make Stranger Things viral. That's what the title
just
of this
make
episode.
Stranger
just
Things
make viral. Yes. Okay. That's the name of this episode.
So I want to say this about Netflix and what they're doing is that they care about the quality of the stuff they're making.
Yeah.
Because if you look at, I think this show, House of Cards, I think Daredevil has all this stuff, is that they are visually making a show that doesn't belong anywhere on network television.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's so high quality visual. It's like care and time. They're not trying to hit a schedule,
and that's the other
beautiful
thing. Hollywood is very concerned about this has to release then. This is what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, for TV series, you had to have 30 episodes because you had to have something every week. Netflix is like, you can kind of tell if you follow the trades that Netflix and Marvel kind of bump up against each other at times because Netflix is like, we'll release it when it's ready. And Marvel's like, oh, no, it's going to release in October or it's going to release in this date. And Netflix is like, I don't know. And when it's ready, we'll let it go.
Yeah.
And you're right. They're not trying to follow any, at least it seems like, they're not trying to follow a system that forces a schedule. It's like cheese, takes time. Wine
takes time.
I don't know. Other things take time.
Other things.
So, yeah, I mean, there you go.
Yeah, man.
This is a weird random discussion that we had this week.
Yeah, mainly because I was just like, hey, I watched Stranger Things this weekend and it was crazy.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed that. So thanks, Zach. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You want to say anything else as we get out of here?
Yeah. If you like what we're doing at Zach on Film, head to MajorSpoilers.com. This is the standard intro or outro, so we know how to actually end the show. Head over to
we could just end it and just get to the little boy saying, this is a podcast. It's copyright 2016.
All right. That sounds cool.
All right.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.